deep effect too. So as we ensure that as we develop our country, we develop it according to the standards that we ensure that our processes and practices are configured or reconfigured to deliver better returns both on the natural and economic aspect. So with us today here is our members from National Treasury. Momo is here, and Cecil is also here. So they will take us through this presentation. And I think it's a two-man team. So far, it's a two-man team. Okay, yeah. Okay, I must tell a little bit of a lie. Okay, two feathers team. Run away from the first. All right, thank you very much, members. Let's accord them a due audience. Momo and Susan, this is your opportunity to take us through. Maybe even before you do that, let me officially indicate to the city that our chairperson is on official mission in Ethiopia, and one of the members, Honorable Mchenta, was involved in a crisis yesterday. We hope that he's not serious. I will follow up immediately after this meeting because I will get notification now. And we've also got an apology from Honorable Swart. So those are three official apologies that have been turned out. So with those observation members, I mean, I'll accord Momo and Susan an opportunity to take us.
Inviting us to present on carbon taxes, I think certainly for us in the department, this is a very, very important issue. And I think that you know, when you talk about any tax, you get lots of major reactions. And I think it's important that in presenting this today, that we kind of obviously look at the whole approach, the impact, and kind of, which doesn't mean to say that we always have consensus, but at least agree on where there are issues or differences or disagreements. I should add that you know, when you talk about the text, as I said, in general, you get this major reaction of no new when you talk about the tax, there's often a lot of reaction because people want to know how come to spend this money. And these are all very legitimate issues because I think taxation is a contract with the public, and certainly on our side as government, there is a commitment then to spend those funds, to spend it in new funds as well. Now, let me just say, because often, before we get to this presentation, the two points I want to make is that often when people then see a tax, they expect it to be earmarked, that it must be spent on environment. And often when people comment, they actually haven't taken into account broad public finance approaches, which is that generally don't like earmarked taxes. And to the extent that there are one or two in the system, some of us would even prefer that those are not there. Because I think that it's more efficient from an economic perspective, from a fiscal perspective, to and it's more transparent that funds are actually appropriated every year. And of course, in looking at the spending, one shouldn't also be narrow, because if you spend money on train infrastructure, that is a big step forward in ensuring that you are reducing the broad carbon footprint, in the sense that transport will actually reduce the number of cars, for example, on the road. So one needs to have a broader perspective on the planning issues. Just the next point I wanted to make is, though, when it comes to the issue of carbon, more than any tax, it arouses a lot of reaction. Now, again, we're not going to deal today with people because who feel, for example, that there's no greenhouse effect, that there's no problem with emitting carbon, and kind of differ on the science. Again, we'll leave those discussions to a scientific debate. I think that we certainly take as granted in coming here that we accept that greenhouse gases will cause global warming, that this, we think the science is very strong, and we'll take that obviously as a given in this discussion. But even if it's not the case, I should add that even from kind of ensuring against the future, because what if you're wrong? Even if you're certain that carbon emissions do not cause global warming, well, it's one thing to think you're right, but what if you prove wrong? What options does it leave us? Because there's only plan A on this planet, which is this Earth. And I don't think for a long, long time, in fact, I don't think ever actually, will we live outside of this planet. So we've got to do everything we can to ensure that we at least keep the climate or the Earth better than what we found it when we come here. Or at least not worse off, if that's how far you prepare to we go. So, Chair, I think we're not going to therefore deal with the science, and I think what we're going to deal with then is how to actually most effectively reduce greenhouse emissions. And I should add that CESCO here will do most of the talking because he has singularly taken quite a strong heat in this area. And if you look at the tragedy going through the slide, I mean, much of this work started, around 2002? And certainly 2006 and 2010, the work culminated in some phases. So in 2006, there was an environmental fiscal reform policy paper. Again, we did have a discussion in Parliament by the court. And thereafter, in 2010, we produced a second paper, which is on the carbon tax option. So this paper, Chair, is the third paper in the series. And again, just to make the point, we don't rush to increase taxes. A lot of people think, we're just going to increase taxes. I think that certainly for the Treasury, we don't take an ad hoc approach to taxation. It's a very considered view, and certainly when there's any new taxes on the horizon, we do think it's important to go through quite a long and gory policy process before the tax is finally implemented. I should add that if you look at the first bullet, that the proposal you have here, it just expands on the, after taking all public comments on the 2010 paper, that we really put forward our proposal in 2012. We did promise that we should have a paper then, but we, further work to be done, and we again repeated that promise in the 2013 budget. So there's no difference essentially in the proposal that was there in terms of the rate and how the carbon tax was going to be imposed. Our proposal for what we want to, how we want to design the carbon tax. So this paper, Chair, to get to the third bullet then, obviously updates the 2010 paper. And it's now really the final carbon tax policy paper before we hope we can get into legislative mode. So we're taking public comments until the 2nd of August. And the idea is after we look at the comments and so on, and further engagements with people who provide comments, that we would then go ahead and publish draft legislation early next, toward the end or early next year. And the idea is to amend the text from the 1st of January 2013. I think that in looking at this, we obviously say that high levels of economic growth must be sustained, obviously, to facilitate significant reductions in the levels of unemployment, poverty, and income inequality. Just stating these things is obvious. But because I think it's important that it's not just the quantity of growth that matters, but also the quality. And I think the important point to note here is if you don't act against carbon emissions, if you don't sort of have a carbon tax now, if we don't, and you'll see later in the argument, what we say is the issue about a carbon tax is how do we actually change future behavior. It's not about raising revenue. It is more about, and I'm not saying there's no revenue issues, obviously there are, but this tax is essentially about changing behavior. And that's why we see we get to point 8 about revenue recycling, because it's about changing future behavior so that we emit less. And in taking that action, I think the point to note is if we weren't to that, if we weren't to make further adjustments, aside from the obvious cost that there would be global warming, if other countries act, because we often ask why are you taking the lead, or amongst the leaders, but aside from being proud to take the lead, I think the point is that if we weren't to take action now, the problem you then face is that if your industries don't adjust today for future production, you will find that the cost of not making these adjustments will probably be far higher than in making the adjustments now. So obviously the other economic arguments deal with market failures, where market prices do not always fully reflect the economic cost of production or consumption. And of course, that happens with pollution. And there is a failure in getting the polluter to pay. And in this instance, if you emit carbon, that's not factored into the price. And hence, government intervention from an economic perspective in this instance, I think there's a clear argument for that. Now, let me leave Tesco to do the rest of the presentation. He's done most of the hard work. So,
thank you, Momoy. Thank you, Chair. I'll just follow on what Momoy said. The next few slides is just to show you some perspective. Momoy talked about the importance of economic growth. I'd like this slide to show you the per capita income history of South Africa, seeing that since 1993, our per capita income has increased. And by 2006, we've caught up with where we were in 1981. So it took quite a long time for us to get back where we were in 1981, that dip we missed. But as Momo mentioned, this tells one story. The other story is around the challenges that you have faced to ensure sustainable economic growth. This is just a very high-level graph to show you one source of information about CO2 emissions. On the left side, you'll see the world emissions in red on the left scale per annum, and on the right scale, the South African emissions. So if you calculate it percentage-wise, South African's emissions is in the order of 1.5%, according to this source. Sources slightly differ from one another, but that's the ballpark figure. And you'll see South Africa's growth was slightly higher than world growth. The right side, you'll see the two giants when it comes to emissions, the US and China. Okay? And obviously, you can go back. Historically, the developed world was the major emitters, but it sort of fitted off during the last decade or so. And you just see how China is becoming a dominant player in the world economy, but also in world emissions. So those two giants will have to take the lead in terms of actions.
first night, 20,000, started printing sort of at 30,000, and then when we look at China and the United States, we're talking in 1,000. Where are we? Are we the combined figure of the world?
No, we are on the right side.
Yeah, but are we at now at 30,000?
No, we are at 450. Our South Africa is on the right scale.
450, okay. And the
450. Okay. So the world is at 30, the world annual emissions around 30,000 million. So 30,000 megatons. Ours is 450. Whereas China is sitting at over 9,000 and the US at about 6,000. Okay? Thanks for that. So, to quote from the Department of Environmental Affairs, some of the environmental challenges that we face as a country are listed on that slide. And in dealing with economic growth, you need to deal with the environmental challenges at the same time. Otherwise, you would find that you sit with an unsustainable growth pattern. And so those challenges range from local emissions, which is basically polluting the air with various emissions like SOx and NOxes, the scientists call them sulfur dioxide. And then the other big one, which is it's got a global scope, which is greenhouse gas emission, climate change. And then there's the issue of biodiversity, water, and so on. And so in dealing with economic growth, you have to deal with all of these challenges at the same time. The World Bank and many other players have made the point, and I think Momo has made the point also earlier on, that in order for us to sustain our growth, and in order for us to sustain the challenges of unemployment and poverty, one has to deal with climate change. This slide makes the point that there has been significant progress made to reduce poverty, especially in developing countries like China, like some of the African countries, and in the African continent. But climate change is posing a risk to those progress that we've made. And if we don't deal with climate change, there is a risk that we will reverse it. And the signs of these are pretty robust, and obviously there are some dissenting voices. But I think the Department of Environmental Affairs, in their white paper on climate change, has spelled out this extra significantly. I'm not going to spend too much light on this. This was just an interesting project that was done by the Millennium Project, identifying some of the major challenges that the world face, being sustainable development one of them. And they go on and make the point that in dealing with these challenges, one of them being sustainable development, we need to deal with climate change. And the second last bullet point in this slide talks about the need to set a price on carbon. And obviously, when we talk about carbon emissions, the energy sector pops out quite big. Because most of our emissions is a result of our use of energy, being electricity or liquid fuels. So you'll find that electricity generation and the transport sector are the two main sectors we have to deal with when we deal with climate change. And within this energy sector, there are two important interventions. One is around renewable energies and the scope of investing in renewable energies, changing the profile of our energy generation. And secondly, the issue of energy efficiency. Those two together is an important initiative to try and deal with some of these challenges. And lastly, the issue of carbon capture and sequestration can also make an important contribution. The next two, three slides is a high-level summary of the points made in the National Climate Change Response White Paper that was published a year or so ago. And there, the point is made that South Africa is relatively one of the high emitters, between 1 and 2%, from 1.5% emissions. And the paper goes into various issues, highlighted just the polluter pay principle, that those that are responsible for emissions should take account for that. And the price mechanisms that we are proposing are playing a role in that. So the paper talks about the mix of instruments being both regulatory instruments and market-based instruments being put in the price recovery. And then the paper ends off with the commitment that South Africa has made in terms of the negotiation process to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 34% by 2020 and 42% by 2025 below business as usual. And then I'm sure some of you have seen this graph and we've reproduced this in the paper. When the Department of Environmental Affairs did the white paper and the long-term mitigation strategy, this is part of the scenario they sketch. That if we don't do anything, that would be the trajectory of business as usual. And if we have to do something, it's a peak, plateau, and decline scenario that is hopefully we can achieve. And in that, there's a range of instruments that can assist us, pricing carbon being one of them. And we'll probably come back to this particular slide many times going forward.
I just want to point out, too, that obviously a lot of this policy then is also driven by the Department of Environmental Affairs, which works pretty closely with that. And in fact, we've even been to the committee to make a presentation on carbon tax last year. So, and I think that at some point you may want to just, even talk to that committee if you want to take this discussions forward.
The point about the impact of greenhouse gas emissions and other environmental issues is that in a normal course of business, it's not fully included in the price of goods. And we talk about there the spillover effect, or what is sometimes referred to as externalities. So you can get either a positive spillover effect or a negative spillover effect. Either positive externalities or negative. Now, this is just a few examples. One of the positive externalities is, for example, research and development. If people undertake research and development, the new knowledge can be passed on to others. Now, if you have to pass on knowledge to others and they don't pay for it, they benefit from it, but you will be disincentivized to do it because you have to carry the cost, and therefore we provide an incentive for R&D and support. Same in the area of health, for example. Immunization has not only benefit to the person that receives the medicine, but also to others, because it then prevents that particular disease to spread. So those are positive things that government supports and subsidizes. But we are, in this particular case, what is called negative externalities, that you are imposing a cost on society, but you're not paying for it. So it's a social cost that society has to carry that result into various private benefits for you. And therefore, one of the mechanisms to deal with that could be through the price method. And here is a summary of the interventions that we can do. You can either do it by way of regulations and or market-based instruments, or a combination of the two. And very important that the two complement each other. And so you'll find that in certain areas, the Department of Environmental Affairs will have minimum standards for air pollution that you have to meet. If you breach that, you are being fined. And that works in certain areas, but it has certain limitations, and therefore the combinations of regulations and price mechanisms are important.
Chair, let me just give another example of this, because what we say is when you have some sort of bad, the issue comes up, how does society deal with it? Do you ban it? Do you limit it in some way? Or do you try and deal with it through the price mechanism, through the market? Okay. And I think a good example is smoking. So for those of us who don't smoke, we were very happy that, for example, that the First Minister of Health post-apartheid government banned smoking in buildings, and in fact banned smoking in any public places and so on. And the whole education on the dangers from passive smoking and so on. So that's a regulation, thou shalt not smoke. in a public place. Linked to that, of course, you know that no one step sometimes works. So you also then impose a tax on tobacco, so that you hope that with both through the price mechanism, by making cigarettes more expensive, for example, so that they pay for some of the costs of, for example, making people unhealthy, together with the command and control measures, don't sell, not smoke in this building, clearly have played, they work together, and they clearly play a big role in reducing the amount of cigarettes consumed. I think that's a good example. And more in this world today, people want us to tax bad goods. So Mayor Bloomberg, for example, tried to ban the quantity of coke. He has not succeeded yet, but that's what he was trying to do, because, as you know, people have too much of this bad drink, and then they are, if you want to impose a tax to limit through the price system the amount of such fizzy drinks that you have. So more and more, I think, even from a public health side, we've been asked to consider using a tax instrument to try and reduce bad behavior, however we deem bad, whatever we deem bad. It's another debate. But.
Thanks, Ramon. This is a quote from a paper that was done for the EU around the role of carbon pricing, and makes the point that a carbon price is important in trying to deal with the area. The rationale for a carbon tax then builds on the argument that we've raised earlier on. It really put a price on high emission and make a level the playing field between low emitting production technologies and high emitting production technologies. The point again that we've made earlier on is that the carbon price on its own probably would not be the only answer, and you need to have a combination of policies. And in South Africa, we are in the process of implementing a combination of policies, like, for example, electricity sector as an attempt to try and determine the mix of energy sources, how successful that is. You can question that. And can the price not be a more effective one? The whole issue of renewable energy also. And this slide probably summarizes very nicely, Chair, within the context of energy, specifically electricity in more particular. This is a slide from the International Energy Agency. And they make the point that your carbon price should be a cross-cutting intervention that we should propose to deal with carbon pricing. It allows a market dynamic operation. People respond to the price. But at the extremes where the price maybe should be either too high or too low, you need other interventions. For example, on energy efficiency, we all know that you should install solar water heaters, but the upfront cost is too high, and so therefore we are reluctant. And there's a need to provide some support for people just to get them there. Once they got it, they realize they will save, and the savings that they will make will pay off for the situation. But the initial outlay is quite high. On the other extreme, technology and research require significant interventions also, and there you need to provide some technology support. So a very nice illustration of the combinations of policies that are required. Two issues that are of critical importance when dealing with pricing carbon or dealing with environmental taxes generally is the distribution impact, especially how it impacts on poor households, and also how it impacts on competitiveness. In this slide, we try to make the point that those concerns are taken into account. And in a global perspective, if there's uniform action, it will be less of a concern. But to the extent that you don't have uniform action to start with, one needs to try and mitigate. And one way of mitigating is to have a phased-in approach, okay? And various other support measures. I think the point that Noma also made earlier on, the first mover competitive advantage case is that if we take early actions our exports will become less carbon intensive and we can compete much better in the international arena. The danger is that if we don't do that, we might face a situation where our exports will be subject to various import tariffs over the period. And then the last point is a phasing approach. That takes me nice to the next slide. People talk about border tax adjustments, a nice word for import tariffs, related to carbon intensive commodities. There's lots of talk about imposing border adjustment tariffs or import tariffs on carbon intensive goods. Some people actually say, well, Africa should also do that. But there's a risk to do that because you interfere with international trade, and impact on global trade, and people can use it as a protective measure. And some people argue that there are instances where people use this as a protective measure. But that's an area that one should be aware of and something that we should consider. Now, in designing the tax, my apologies, this is 2 months, but the second is probably number two, there are three possible approaches you can take. And these are not mutually exclusive, they're sort of linked to one. One is that you have a meter where you actually measure carbon emissions. The other one is where you do it by way of a proxy. And the option that we've gone to is the one highlighted in blue there is a fossil fuel import. And as I said, these approaches are not mutually exclusive. They support one another. The fossil fuel input one is that there's a factor that has been calculated to estimate the greenhouse gas emission based on the fuel that you use.
But I should add, I mean, some of it is also an issue of practicality. I think ideally it helps to have, when you want to change behavior, to have tax at the point at which people consume that good, so that they see, you know, so much percent is a carbon tax, and we hope they change their behavior. Obviously that's not possible or practical at this stage, but it's something which over time may change, and hence we are in effect have to put the tax upstream. In the same way as we have the emissions tax on cars, what is called if you go certainly to Europe, and I don't know how much, I haven't bought a new car here, but you actually see the price that's put into the car, so you know exactly what you're paying for emissions.
That's by way of background, Chair. Then, as we indicated, this is really already a very highly summarized version of what was in the 2012 budget review, and it's in the document. We are proposing a carbon tax at 120 rand per ton. Now, obviously, if you have to adjust for inflation, but I think the idea is to leave it at 120 come the implementation date and not to adjust for inflation at the beginning. You adjust it after the implementation date. Then, once it's started to implement it, is to increase it at slightly higher than inflation, at about 10% for the first period, and then maybe after that, just by way of inflation. Starting date is proposed as 1st January 2015. And here, in the design, we took into account all the comments that we received to make sure that we phase this thing in gradually, so that the impact will be felt not immediately, so that you don't have a disruption. So, in that respect, we propose a basic threshold that is free at 60% of the actual emissions. So, companies will only pay on 40% of the emissions. But an additional relief of 10% for process emissions, and then an additional for trade exposed sectors, and then there's a carbon offset mechanism. Overall, a company within certain sectors can get a tax-free threshold of up to 90%, which means that for the first 5 year period, they will only pay for 10% of the emissions. And then after the first phase, which will end in 2020, one can then review those particular thresholds. This table is a high-level summary of those percentage in the previous slide. We've got sectors, these are after the consultation, and obviously, depending on the next round of consultation, these sectors might be more defined. I can go through this slide in more detail during the question.
No, no,
just give an example, because Chair, I think, and I think it's an important point. I think in South Africa, the basic issue, I don't know if members have the papers in front of the actual paper in front of them. But, you know, for example, you do have a table showing our emissions profile, as Cecil has said. In our case, most of it is energy related, and a lot of that is obviously electricity. That obviously means that you have to, if you impose that carbon tax, you would do it right at the source, with Eskom, for example. Now, what does that mean? If you look at this tax, initially I think when we published the paper, some people were jumping to conclusions that it's 120 a ton, or at that time what did we say, 120 a ton, that it's on 100% of emissions. The first 60% is tax-free, okay, when you start. And then you see that depending on the process, because if you're producing cement, for example, it's what we call, there's a process emission, so you get 10% for that. There's a trade exposure percent, okay, 10%. So, you know, they could go right up to 80 plus, they can do some offsetting. So that goes, you know, it could typically for an industry go up to 90%. So depending on how you've adjusted your behavior as well, you find that the tax-free threshold actually increases. And that's important, because what we're saying here is for the first 5 years, we're starting at a pretty low level. We've heard industry, it's not very tough on industry. Okay. In the next 5 years, we might adjust it slightly up, and it's still not very tough. The important thing is the signal. It's signaling that we're serious about the tax. And unlike other taxes, we're saying over the next 5 to 10 years, this is the rate at which we'll have it. And of course, the warning is that after 10 years, this thing will go up very steeply. So that you've got 10 years for your future production as you replace your current, as your current machinery needs to be replaced, that you need to buy cleaner technologies so that you don't get impacted on by the much higher tax in 10 years' time. So this is about changing your behavior today so that you pay less taxes tomorrow, and tomorrow being in 10 years' time. It's to try and signal that we all need to move towards a cleaner technology, and you've got this long period to actually adjust. Even though the clock is ticking, and Cecil, what have we now? We just reached the threshold of 400 parts per million. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that that's an important point, because the scientists have said if we reach the 420 parts per million threshold in terms of emissions, you will have an increase in temperatures and excess pollution. So that's a very important Celsius. Chair, there's an adjustment that we propose on a 60%. You can even get your basic tax-free threshold can even be higher than 60% if you are making investment that goes beyond the average for the company. So if you have made historical investments and your benchmark emissions is better than what is the average for the industry, you can increase your adjustment. And there's a Z factor that we discuss in the paper. As I mentioned, the sector that is of prime importance in this debate is the energy sector. And in South Africa, the prices of both the main energy goods or services that we produce are regulated. So you have the liquid fuel, petrol and diesel, is a regulated price, although it's largely driven by international prices, the exchange rate and the oil price, and the electricity price is also regulated. And the question that comes up is how do the carbon price impact on these two prices, and what pass-through mechanisms are there? In the case of electricity currently, there's an automatic pass-through. In the case of liquid fuel, there is no oscillating part. And so you need to have a balance in terms of how do you deal with these different ways we regulate these two sectors. An important intervention, as I mentioned earlier on, is energy efficiency. There is an energy efficiency policy that was published by the Department of Energy a few years ago, and they've regularly updated that particular energy policy. We've interfaced with the department, and one of the interventions that we think we can help with is to provide an energy efficiency incentive. And there's a draft regulations that we will publish very soon to encourage businesses to improve their energy efficiency, and it will be basic. And this is one of the mechanisms that we are proposing to recycle some of the carbon revenue. And though it will be implemented before the carbon revenue tax kicks off, it's a very important intervention. The paper has an annexure where we discussed in fairly detail this tax incentive. So I urge you to have a look at that. Then there was a lot of debate about the electricity levy that we currently have in place. What do we do with that? And obviously there were particular contexts in which this tax was introduced in 2009. It actually was beginning to signal that we're going to tax carbon. Okay? But it also has a demand side management effort, given the problems we had with electricity at the time. Coupled with this is the whole importance of funding renewable energy, the funding for solar water heaters, and also funding for the roads that were are damaged by coal trucks. So previously there were levies incorporated into this tariff. We've said, let's make it more explicit and make it part of the electricity levy. So people must be very aware that it's very easy to shift this back into the tariff, but I think for us, transparency is important to leave it here. And so this revenue, part of this revenue is really sort of, as indicated, softly earmarked already for a particular purpose. And therefore, I think it's important to keep this for a while. Then, broadly, what do you do with revenue? Well, obviously, the government doesn't generate revenue just for the sake of revenue. Generate revenue, and it's appropriated very transparently by the risk committee through various mechanisms. And that is our general approach, so that you don't fix yourself and say, this will only be used for that. Let's have a more transparent way of doing it. Nevertheless, there are particular high-priority programs, and it's important that those programs be very spelled out to indicate to people where some of the money might go. It's the question of supporting renewable energy, supporting the electricity, the energy efficiency that we've talked about, supporting carbon capture and storage. There's another list I'll come to later on. Then, if there is still some revenue room that you can play with, you can reduce certain other debts. For example, one can potentially reduce the current electricity levy, or you can reduce other taxes if there is sufficient revenue raised, or if there is a need for more revenue, you don't increase other taxes. So that's the important debate about tax shifting. And then lastly, I mentioned the issue of tax incentive, which is the point that raised earlier. Some of the existing incentives that we have in place already is the exemption for certified emission reductions through the CDM project, which is part of the Kyoto Protocol. We've got accelerated depreciation for renewable energy projects. We've got an R&D incentive. There's a biodiversity incentive, which we are busy reviewing, and we're coming to the committee and as part of the TLAB process. And lastly, the energy efficiency one. And in broad, the paper suggests some of the high-level interventions that we could use some of this money for is, as per the white paper, climate change white paper. There are various flagship programs being listed, and one of the slides later on expand on that. But from where we sit, we think there are particular interventions that can help the households. For example, we look at the pre-basic electricity, make sure that that works well. It's very targeted. In some areas it works, others not. Momo talked about the investment in trains earlier on. public transport. That's a very important thing, because with investing in public transport, you achieve many objectives. You provide a more affordable transport for low-income people, or everybody, and also you reduce congestion and emissions. And for business, those are the things, in summary, that I've mentioned in the previous slides. Chair, in conclusion, the carbon tax that is implemented gradually and complemented by effective and efficient revenue cycling can contribute to significant emission reductions. A carbon tax will be introduced as part of a package of intervention to ensure the primary objective of greenhouse gas emissions is achieved, and to minimize potential adverse impacts on low-income households and industry competitiveness, various interventions are proposed. That, in summary, is our input. There is a set of slides which is copied, not in color, which provides some background information, and during question time we can start refer to some of those slides. Thank you.
But I should add, Chair, so it's this handout here, and what it covers is, for example, make some projections in terms of numbers. This refers to some, modeling of the carbon tax impact, etc. Which I don't know. You don't want to say anything up front. You want to leave for questions.
Depending on time, I don't know if you want me to spend a bit more time on that, or do we leave it for questions and we can come back on questions? Because the slides have there's a few the two slides that shows you what is happening in the rest of the world. There's a few slides that talk about the model impact of it. I thought that might be better to leave it up to question time.
I just wanted to say something.
Just a comment on this, Chair. Perhaps.
This is not question time. You wanted to say something
on this? No, on the process, yes.
Okay.
These aren't working. Perhaps the first. There's a lot of slides here, but perhaps they could just take us through the first one, slide 37, which has a list of rather good questions, which actually cover many of mine. So maybe you could just run through these issues.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, thanks a lot. These are some of the questions that people have raised during our...
Just on one second, I saw Honorable Rengar raising her hand. Was it on processes, or do you want to talk about questions?
No, just
okay, thank you very much. Okay,
let's just try. I'm not going to try and answer all of them extensively, but these are some of the questions that were raised. The impact of electricity prices, given the already high increase in electricity prices. Obviously, as we indicated, the high threshold that is in there for at 60% would provide significant relief. So the actual impact would be muted significantly. Eskom, for example, will only pay taxes on 40% of the actual emissions if they then also invest in offset projects on only 30%. So you can multiply 30% with 120, that would be the effective tax that they will pay, which is slightly even less than the current electricity level. So we think the impact on electricity prices with the threshold that we propose would not be that significant.
I should add, Chair, for us, the increase in electricity prices in a sense is already achieving much of what we want. We want to say with the carbon tax, because assuming there hadn't been an increase, the fact that there's been these increases has had an impact on consumption, on energy efficiency, of investments, etc. So, in a way, even though it wasn't put up for that reason, it's similar conceptually to the carbon tax in this instance. I think what we're talking about is, would there be any further increases over and above what there is, which is what CESCO has said.
And so we can come back to those questions. Obviously, the impact of electricity on households, and we've mentioned the question of for local income households, one can look at a more robust pre-basic services. And on businesses, besides the tax-free threshold that we propose, is the important thing of the energy efficiency tax incentive, and I urge you really to look at that and see how that will significantly reduce debt. On the impact of jobs and economic growth, the economic modeling that we've done, there's a two or three slides later on, there's a whole chapter in the paper on that. The impact is at worst neutral. There might be a slight negative effect over the short term, but if you look at this particularly over the medium term, the impact should not be negative. As a matter of fact, if you take into account the fact that we will be able to reduce our emissions profile, you'll have a more sustainable growth trajectory. The next question, or the next point listed, the effectiveness of the carbon tax given the regulatory impact. There, I think, it's a question of how do you nuance a regulation and a price. The one on its own probably will not do the job, because you can't predict accurately what will happen in the market. So regulation can take you only up to a particular point, and it can't. And I would refer to you in this context that slide that I showed that was produced by the International Energy Agency. Their particular views on that might be quite helpful. I've talked about the border adjustment tax. We can come back to that. The impact on trade on green protection measures is linked to border adjustment tax, Chair. The most appropriate timing given the current economic climate, obviously timing is very difficult because you don't know what business cycle there is, but these are long-term interventions, so you need to take that into account. These are not short-term interventions, and you have to ride the business cycle in this process. Do we have to wait for global agreement on climate on carbon price? That's a difficult one, because the negotiation process has been a long and slow process. But as I showed in some of the slides later on, many, many countries are taking action in this regard. Although South Africa is is one of the top 20 emitters, it's still a small player. Comparatively, South Africa is one of the big players. If you look at on the African continent, we stand out significantly in the growing greenhouse gas profile. On the world average, we're above the world average. So that is a thing. Then a question that we've asked is, can we talk about green growth strategy without pricing carbon? The answer probably is no. There's no way you can have a serious green growth strategy without properly pricing carbon. The international aviation and maritime sector, that's an important debate. Internationally, the question is, what do you do with this sector? Because you can't tax it from a domestic perspective. You have to have international agreement. My view is that these are the two sectors that, if there is an international agreement, will probably first affected by an international carbon price. The EU has already wanted to include the rest of the world into the emissions trading system. There was huge objection. They have retreated for now. I was in the EU I was in Paris last week. I talked to the EU Commission, and they're saying they were just waiting for the next step in terms of the UNFCCC discussion on this particular issue before they take the next move. And then lastly, carbon budget. Carbon budget is also a regulatory intervention that you try and put certain targets for certain sectors. It's very difficult. The Department of Environmental Affairs is trying to work to try and put greenhouse gas targets for various sectors. We think if you have a price mechanism, the response to that system will work. But obviously, we will have to try and see how we can mirror that regulatory intervention with the carbon price. How that gives you a feel of some of the challenges that we face, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Norman, for a thorough presentation. Members, this is a presentation on the carbon tax policy paper. At an inception stage, of course, we still have to go through a thorough and robust legislative process at some stage. I just wonder as to your workflow, how are you timing this process? Because I hear the AI on was some deliberation with the environmental sector at some stage, and invitations like 2 years ago, if not some months ago. So that simply says as to when we want to see some of these things happening also becomes very, very critical. But that's just a comment. And members, I think feel free then to post questions then to the presentation as after. Honorable Wenge will be followed by Honorable Harris and Honorable Ross, Honorable Goranov, and Honorable Telezana in that order.
Thank you, Chair President. I think the latter part of Cecil's input, especially with regard to responding to the questions that I hear, has actually preempted most of my questions. But let me ask two, but today he has already actually given some light around those, because I was going to maybe check as to whether the social and economic impact assessment study that was done since 2010, the Department for Environmental Affairs did some work pertaining to such aspects, and a number of stakeholders having been consulted, as you have alluded to. You have also indicated around the advantages of the introduction of this tech, which is understood. But the issue of South Africa as one of the most emitters in the world. Now, in relation to rate of taxation, is it done per a manufacturer in that particular country, or to the country in relation to the global standing of responding to the issues of climate change? I'm asking this as maybe an extension of the social and the economic impact. Then lastly, Chair, as South Africa is in Africa where the underdeveloped countries are, we are underdeveloped. But in terms of this, as also the culprit in terms of being emitting most maybe in Africa, is the approach that we have taken, the commitments that we made as a country, are they taken kindly by other African states? Because I think we are leading by example, because we know that we are part of the emitters at that level. But now, how are we regarded here at home by African states? And also because of the global standards, we are saying, you have indicated that most countries are actually doing something as a direct response to this. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Firstly, I need to get on record that the DA is committed to building a green economy in South Africa and tackling the issue of climate change globally. I also personally, if I may, have some interest, given that really the challenge of climate change is one that future generations will face. And my daughter is turning one next weekend, and I feel many of these challenges are things that her generation will have to bear. So I am internalizing that externality, if you will, on a personal level. Because I know I want her to be able to live in a world where we don't face these challenges of climate change. That said, I have serious concerns, and I think my party does, about this proposal on the table. The reality is, while we support the principle of pricing carbon on an international level, if it's going to be effective, it needs to be adopted by all countries or by the majority of countries. We simply can't act unilaterally, particularly in a climate where we're barely growing. In the first quarter, we grew at less than 1%. We're growing slower than the developed world markets, and we're totally out of step with other emerging markets like Indonesia, which is growing at 6%, or Chile, which is growing at 4%. We have a growth problem in South Africa, and imposing a new tax at this stage is simply, as far as we're concerned, not an option. On page 43 of the discussion document, page 41, the document reads, while the country, talking about South Africa at the top of page 41, while the country will internalize the negative externalities associated with its greenhouse gas emissions, it will be unable to capture benefits. That is, unless the rest of the world also mitigates against greenhouse gas emissions. And then later it says, only global mitigation efforts will have a significant impact on climate change. And that, aside from the growth argument, is another major argument against this model. The reality is, the case that Treasury made, Chair, confused the issue. It spoke about how we need to tackle climate change. And I've said we need to do that at a global level. It's something the planet needs to get right. But Treasury fudged it by making sound as if South Africa needs to tackle this issue. And the truth is, we can't. Individual action here by one country cannot solve this global problem. We need a coordinated action. And what we're arguing is, we certainly can't afford to be the first movers in this game. So essentially, the we that Treasury is talking about at the beginning is the planet. And the we later, to justify what the planet needs to do, imposes all of these additional costs on the South African economy. And that, I think, is unacceptable. If we do this, we will have very, very little impact on global climate emissions, unless what we do is coordinated with other countries. Effectively, we could sit on our hands on this for half a century, and if China and the US cut their emissions marginally, they'll have an infinitely bigger effect on this than we will. So, Chair, there's no logic to us being an effective first mover on this. And I know we're not a first mover in a global context, because rich economies like Scandinavian economies and Australia have moved. But certainly in the developing world, we would be first movers. Talking about India and Costa Rica is disingenuous. It's like someone in Costa Rica saying, well, South Africa has this carbon tax on vehicle sales and an environmental levy on electricity, therefore they're moving already. It's just not a rational, logical argument. Now, Chair, the comment was made that South Africa is proud to take the lead on this. We have to look at the cost of that. I mean, that refers to political leaders and officials going to international conferences and feeling proud that they're committing this country to this path of action. That's fine, but what is the cost? I am not convinced that South Africa can bear the cost so that those politicians can feel proud at those international conferences. We already have existing taxes, the carbon tax on vehicle sales, which I believe raises about $8.5 billion a year, and the environmental levy, which I think is 1.6. So firstly, this proposal would seem to be double taxation, and I think we would stand very, very firm that those taxes need to be scrapped in the face of any additional tax, which we would oppose in principle anyway. But my question is, have those levies affected behavior or simply raised that revenue for government? And on the issue of ring fencing, if this tax is not about revenue reduction, then surely there's a perfectly logical case to ring fence it. And this revenue recycling argument is, Chair, I think simply a euphemism to say that there won't be matching cuts in existing taxes, which would frankly be the only acceptable solution as far as we're concerned. Chair, the other consideration for South Africa is the structure of our electricity sector. We have effectively an electricity monopoly, generating electricity mainly from a single source, which is burning coal. So when you impose a tax on a market, you do it, as Treasury argues, to try and derive some behavior change. But the truth is we can't change to other electricity sources in South Africa. It would be a tax that would be impossible to avoid. You essentially, mitigation is impossible, so you actually won't be able to derive a significant behavior change benefits. Then, Chair, lastly, I know I've taken a long time, but a few specific questions. How will you measure the greenhouse gas footprint? I've read the discussion documents and it isn't clear to me. And who else will pay on these emissions? Will municipalities and provincial governments or individuals pay? Is there a minimum emission threshold before you're taxed? Chair, lastly, two alternatives, perhaps. I understand we signed a South Africa Renewable Initiative at COP17 with us and I think six European countries. I understand that there are funds available from those countries to help achieve some of these very noble ends in South Africa, but what is the status of us accessing those funds? Is it responsible to talk about taxing, introducing a new tax while we appear not to have made any progress in accessing those funds that have apparently been pledged? And lastly, there's a significant part of the paper deals with how the alternative, which is a cap and trade scheme, has not worked in Europe, for example, because of design problems. But the obvious question to me when I read the discussion paper is, can't we solve some of those design problems? And if we could, wouldn't that cap and trade scheme certainly mitigate many of these economic downsides that I'm having? And Chair, my last question is, on the growth modeling...
Is that your real last question?
This is my real last question. The growth modeling on page 40 to 46, it's a little bit unclear to me. And I would appreciate it if someone could just either take us through the argument between 40 and 46 in terms of the actual, what the models say in terms of impact on growth, or simply send the committee the original papers where the growth models were done. Thank you, Chair. That was my last.
Thank you very much. I'm noting with interest here the number of written comments that has been made. I'm quoting selectively. One says, I fully share your analysis that inaction will not be environmentally, economically, or politically sustainable. Close call. But then the National Treasury is here to give a response to your question. Now, Ross, that's it.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if the mic is working.
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. Chairperson, yes, I think Tim has dealt with it extensively. And let me just start by asking the question. You see that we have put the cart perhaps before the horse in terms of the project, in terms of the taxation part, but to look at how do we power our energy sector in South Africa. And let me make this comment as a starting point that all things being equal, we would all like to prefer that we power our economy through renewable energy, if everything was equal. Unfortunately, the situation is not that easy. We are totally reliant on coal. I think we use 90% of our generation is coming from coal production. And that's also the position in Africa. Africa, of course, is energy rich, but electricity poor. And it's a very, it's not correct to make the analysis that in terms of ash to compare with the rest of Africa that we are the big emitter and that we have to scale down on this. The rest of Africa is in fact compared to South Africa, I think they're energy poor, energy rich but electricity poor, and we have to take that into consideration. Just in the global context, and Thomas made the valuable point that the impact of climate change needs to be addressed globally, otherwise we will not have the impact we have on the region. Obviously we see it's the USA and we see it's China. And I have an article where there's a huge question by business and and other interests, and asking why South Africa needs to press ahead with such measures as the carbon tax when the rest of the world is lagging behind. Let us not preempt the problem, but rather look what we can do as an alternative in South Africa, and that would be my recommendation. If we look at the integrated resource plan in our energy sector, which is how we're going to power our electricity over the next 30 years, that needs an urgent revision. We've seen now lately statements by the ministers, Jigaba specifically with regards to nuclear plants. He was endorsed by the Minister of Energy that we will embark on a nuclear, huge nuclear plant to power our economy. And those are all rather vague, and I think it is a contradiction in terms of the carbon tax thing. If we are moving away from, in terms of bulk supply to nuclear, and there's a lot of uncertainty. I think that the point that I'm trying to make is that we need to revise our integrated resource plan as a starting point before we introduce extra taxes. In other words, that we don't have a misalignment between certain departments. And I would like to make the recommendation that we call the Minister of Energy to this committee to assess what is the progress in terms of renewables, what progress are we making, and what is the position in terms of nuclear before we embark on a carbon tax. That could be my recommendation. Just with regards to the unintended consequences of the proposed tax, it will have severe impact on electricity pricing. I think it's 2.4 cents per kilowatt hours would be the increase. I did not find it in the presentation today, but that would be the increase. It will take us away from the inflation-related tariffs once again, where we've made so much progress in terms of the 24 to 60%. We will be moving away from inflation-related tariffs, and that's something we need to consider. Certainly, I agree with your departure point in terms of the introduction, so that you say high levels of economic growth must be sustained to facilitate significant reduction in the levels of unemployment, poverty, and income inequality. That's where we should focus on, and then coordinate with all departments, also the Environmental Committee. I agree perfectly that we should speak to them as well. But certainly we have to see that there's no misalignment in terms of what we are proposing at this point in time. Can I just say that I was at the European Parliament and I spoke on carbon tax at that forum, and I was amazed to see that my African counterpart representatives were not aware of any unintended consequences in terms of carbon tax. It's a very valuable tool to promote your country and to speak at that international level, but the consequences of the implementation of this tax needs to be very seriously considered.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is, I'm sitting in a finance committee now, but basically I want to have my green hat on. But you're making it very difficult for me. I think you've been quoted to say it's not about raised revenue carbon taxes, but it's about a changed behavior. Now, my concern is that I would like to see a joint report from Energy and Treasury before you come with a proposal with regard to carbon taxes. I think you've jumped the gun here, unfortunately. And you just may jeopardize a very good idea by jumping the gun. So my obviously, I think the timing is just wrong on Treasury to come forward with a carbon tax proposal at this time. It's just simply not on. You know, if you read the National Development Plan, it takes out that you can, you have to rebate the electricity sector, and they are producing 59%. Of all emissions so far. You're going to hit the small guys here. You know, if you look at the electricity and you add mining and you add coal, then you're making up 50, 58, 60%. You know, what is left? The small guys. I'm concerned that our energy policies are not properly policed, or our environmental laws are not properly policed. If we do that, maybe it's not necessary to change behavior. They will do it for you. But to use a tax before, I'm not convinced that everything else is in order. It is the wrong way to start it. And we're just sending a very, very bad signal at the wrong time for this country. We're battling to stay the number one economy in Africa. They're not going to do this, I'm telling you. They will not introduce carbon taxes before they make sure everything else is in order. So, my suggestion, we've listened to you, but come back to us. I've never believed the Treasury when they say they will shift taxes. If you can come to with a proper analysis and say, yes, if we introduce carbon taxes and there is behavior, we will shift taxes, then maybe you will have my vote. But I've never believed the Treasury that they shift taxes. They are there for revenue, and that's their job, and to make sure that it is not wasted.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Gordon of Chair has actually covered most of my questions, but what I would request Treasury really to do, I agree, I think it's just jumping the gun. I agree with Honourable Gordon. In the sense that if you look at the carbon tax policy paper that is sitting in front of us, you go to page 29, where you are saying carbon pricing will encourage a shift in production and more energy efficiency technologies. This is what you're saying. Now, you come to the committee. Now, I'm sitting in this committee and I'm asking myself, what we have just said today, can I see it? It's just an ordinary person. Is there a shift? The answer is no. Now, if the answer is no, well, must we then believe on the assumption, must we assume that they are not going to have a significant rise on electricity? Must we assume? Because the time where we are in right now, like what was said earlier on, seems not to be conducive to the changes, PDG, in that you look at who is using electricity most in our country, it's the mining. And you look at what is happening in the mining to this date, there is so much retrenchment, there is so much instability. Now, if this is what you are saying and you go to the next page, which is page 30 of the same document, so you are saying all economic sectors and industries contribute through technology and efficiency improvement. How far have you gone with that? Have you seen that? Is there an improvement? I haven't seen it. And as far as the technology is concerned, really, I was listening to the budget vote of the Department of Technology. I did not pick up what you are talking about on the paper. Now, you also refer to the other in a presentation on page 30 again, where you are talking about the key policy measures. You keep link all those things, the revised national being all those things, they are not there. It's theory. So then now Chair, the big question is going to be, are we as South Africans, are we ready, are we at that stage? If you put the carbon tax, what is going to happen? Don't you have other alternatives? Can we request other departments like energy to tell us how far we can go with the alternatives? Can we call environment and tell us as to how far when they were designing the policy that they've gone with whatever they proposed? So that at the end of the day, us as a committee, we then have a very comprehensive understanding of the report.
Okay. Let's take the response, and if there are follow-up questions, we'll entertain those after. Or you wanted to make an addition on our Ross?
Yes, I just want to ask a question about this new Davis Commission on the tax review, whether this fits into that framework, perhaps.
That's an additional question. You can take that also.
Yes, Chair. Glad members have raised very hard questions because this is a very hard issue, and I hope for honor will help take his 1 year old won't vote against his party in their stand for what they failed to do today.
because I think that these are hard issues. It does impact, it could impact on growth, on cost certainly, and so on. But I would beg to differ. The clock is ticking. The emissions are coming out at a frightening rate. Martin Wolf in the Financial Times said the skeptics have already won because the world has decided to do nothing or not enough. For example, various studies going on in the world. And certainly I think Europe has been leading, but it's true. In the United States, the politics are paralyzed, and President Obama could not even mention the word climate change after a year in office because Congress, the composition changed, and so on. So I don't think that anybody would disagree. Obviously, South Africa acting alone will hardly impact on global emissions. You do need globally coordinated action. The harder question to answer is what do you do and how do you get global coordinated action? Don't underestimate South Africa's leadership role. A lot of, and it's not just to feel good, but in signaling in South Africa that a developing country is moving in this direction. And if you do look at measures in China, India, again, they're facing the same dilemma, but they too are taking measures, we're not saying all the way, to try and mitigate. If we don't take action today, you can't wait till tomorrow to take action. That is the reality here. Okay? If you believe global warming is a problem, if you believe that the amount of emissions per annum is a problem, then as a world we have to do something. I think the solution that we should do nothing because the US and China are not doing enough, I think is a very bleak approach, personally. And I think we should debate that. And I think that the suggestion that you have a joint session with the Committee of Energy and Environment Chair, I think is a good one. Because I think that will bring the full perspective. The problem we have, obviously, with Parliament processes is that things are fragmented. So these issues have been out in the public domain, not that the President just made an announcement because he wants to feel, as Humble Harris says, I think, not to feel good about saying it. In making those commitments, it's been through proper white paper processes. Government has committed to a position. Now, if we have that position, the one issue is then what do you do about it? What are the most effective tools? And there's several measures that you have, and it's not correct, I think, and that's why I think a joint hearing would be useful. You see the various initiatives that South Africa has, and South Africa does have a pretty comprehensive strategy. We put out the tenders for renewables, okay, but renewables don't give you what they call baseload. So, Honorable Ross, if you put nuclear, you will have baseload, okay? So, I don't see the inconsistencies. And bear in mind that what we're saying now is not a matter of change your energy composition now and then only impose a tax. Well, then you wait 20, 30 years, okay, perhaps. The point is that the tax is being imposed now to get companies, to including Eskom, okay, to change their behavior, including government. So it's saying that we're serious about it, and you're looking at its introduction at a fairly low level. You will see that there have been extensive comments and engagements, okay, with industry, with the mines, with electricity, and given that we do have a monopolistic supplier of monopoly supplier of electricity, you have to take all of those into account. Hence, you have the 60% exemption. And frankly, in our assessment, the first 10 years, you are looking at a very low impact. The real impact is going to be after 10 years. If you compare, for example, the 120 rand per ton, that it's now very easy to it's very easy to figure out that that is $12, okay? You just divide by 10, okay? But although the rand was 980 last night. If you look at other countries,
sorry, President, don't make another speech.
I think Honorable Harris should realize that, I'm just saying that the U.S. market determines the dollar is very strong. Look at what happened to Brazil and so on. Look at the. I'm also making a joke. But I'm saying, Chair, that in other countries you're looking at $30-$40 per ton. Okay. So we're starting at a very, very low level. Okay. And of course, after 10 years, we are talking then of steep increases. So that the signal thing is important. With regard to what we call revenue recycling, and we're going off, I like to think that the Treasury thinks more about growth and jobs, okay? It's not about just raising revenue, it's about quality of spending, etc. Certainly, I like to think that the record of the Treasury has not been to make ad hoc tax increases. So certainly, whilst nobody can guarantee, because you can have different people here who jack up any tax, whether it's a carbon tax, income tax, someone who wants to jack up tax rates can do it, okay, if they have the power to do it. The point is that in introducing it, we're very clear that we should see some tax shifting, so that ideally there is some recycling. You're beginning to tax the sinners, and you hope, and it's a question of balance. You've got to look at the numbers. It's easier said than done. But we do then have to get into more detailed modeling to see what actual revenue has been raised, then to what extent can you lower rates, or to what extent do you actually fund public transport, for example, or other forms of more efficient energy measures that government wants us to take. So, Chair, all I'm saying is this is a challenge that is facing the world, and Honorable Harris is right, that we do need globally coordinated action. But I don't believe the solution is to do nothing until there's globally coordinated action. Don't underestimate South Africa's role in helping us to get global coordination. I think that we do play quite an important role. And that's why I would welcome that. I think it's important, I think, to have the other players from the Environmental Affairs Committee and certainly energy, because we do need to, ourselves within government, coordinate our actions to ensure that we are achieving the same objectives. So I would beg to differ with many of the members who have raised their objections. I don't think we're jumping the gun. I don't think we're jumping too early. The clock is ticking. And we welcome a broader discussion to show you how the clock is ticking, what the emissions are, and so on. In terms of tools, obviously those are very legitimate issues raised. Whether you do it through a tax, whether you do it through a cap and trade system, we've not ruled out the cap and trade. We've said that there's a place for it, but the carbon tax is a more effective mechanism. There has been a shift in other countries, like Australia, which started with also a capping system, okay, but is now focusing on carbon tax. Even their tax is pretty modest in the way it's been introduced. Again, a signaling issue. So, I think a lot of the issues that have been raised, obviously about how we deal with our energy needs, what you know, to to what extent we use coal, to what extent we use nuclear, to what extent we use renewables, I think are important issues. So certainly from Australia we'd welcome a more open discussion on that. With regard to, I think, issues of ring fencing and so on, I think that those obviously are kind of secondary issues. Once you have a tax and we're saying there's no real revenue motive in motivating for this, but in reducing emission, it's like the tobacco tax or excise that it's obviously not meant to raise revenue, doesn't raise much revenue. Sure, with the carbon tax, the potential can be high. The impact it's going to have on the mining sector is something we've taken into account. We've had lots of interactions with the intensive energy users. I must say that since this proposal is out last year, nobody's been screaming and kicking from when the first proposal was made, because I believe we've taken a lot of their concerns into account, and we still continue to engage with them. Having said that, I think it's important to differentiate between knee-jerk reactions. If anybody thinks they can't pay a tax, they will make a noise. So I think the noise factor is important to account. I think with regard to, I don't know if Cecil, if you want to come in, but I think I've dealt with the broad issues. I think there's a lot of points made about the timing and so on, but perhaps if we were to look at that joint sitting with the two other committees, I think that it would enable a fuller presentation, and the whole white paper processes that the government has gone through. And if we accept that as the policy of government, then there are certain implications that follow. But certainly I think in raising this tax issue, again, it's only, as you know, when you actually have the legislation that you actually get to the specific, you can become more specific about some things. But to the extent that there are these impact studies, I think they've been published by the Treasury. You put it out, but it's been out, right? But let's make it available, and in fact it would be worth going through it, I would say, either to do that in a joint session or at another session, because I think those are important questions to look at. And I think the concerns that Honourable Harris has raised with regard to impact on growth, jobs, etc. are important. But I should add that let's not look at the low growth today. This tax we're talking about is, if it were implemented, would be in 2015. Sure, it does have an impact on future investors, okay, because investors want certainty. But I think the issue of growth is something that the Treasury has certainly put on the agenda, and something that we clearly need to focus on anyway, whether you have a carbon tax or not.
Thanks, Mo. I think you've covered most of the issues. I think the slide I've got on here is a very high-level summary of some of the issues that is in the white paper on climate change response. So it would be nice if the committee discussed this with the Committee of Environmental Affairs and deal with that. On the issue of revenue, I think our commitment is there. If you look at the Department of Environmental Affairs budget, it's there. The Green Fund that's been created is there. So those are on budget allocations that are already in the system. So I don't think the question of not allocating money is not an issue. So I'm not too sure. I mean, to me, to us, that's far more transparent and far more flexible than what has been suggested of a ring fencing of money. On the modeling, there are three slides in the back. Slide 46. 47 and 48, that gives you a very high level summary of the modeling. The impact there, we've come to the conclusion, it provides support for sustainable growth, it will reduce emissions, and the impact on growth should be marginal. And it's not only one model, there's about three or four models that we flag in the paper. So the modeling is pretty robust. As a matter of fact, we are busy with another round of modeling to fine-tune the design features of the modeling. On the question of what is happening international, I think it's very important to realize that lots of countries are already doing a lot. China is experimenting with carbon trade. They also talk about the carbon tax as we speak. India have done something, Costa Rica, South Korea, Japan, Australia, Canada, and you name it. So there's a lot that's happening individually with the intention to bring these all together. One of my colleagues just returned from Spain over the weekend, where the World Bank has hosted something like 15 countries participating in the discussion on a mechanism to introduce carbon pricing, either through a tax or a emission trading system. From an economic perspective, there's no difference between the two. Okay? They all achieve the same thing. It's designed as matters. Okay? Whether you've got a capital trade or a carbon tax, doesn't make any difference. It's the design and the practical implementation. The flaw in Europe is not the flaw of the emissions trading system, it's the flaw of the design. Whether you prefer an emissions trading system or a tax system becomes a marginal issue. The advantage of the tax system, which has been recognized throughout the world and in the literature, it provides more certainty. Okay. It provides a lot more stable price trajectory, and it provides more certainty for investors also. So if you want to kibble around a tax or a carbon emissions trading system, that's on the margin. It's a principle that you need to have in mind. Lastly, the question of the impact and tax shifting, I find the comment a bit surprised because we're very clear in the document that's one of the options. And so depending on the revenue that you've got, you can implement that. And as a matter of fact, the net impact here would be probably zero if you do it in the beginning. Because if you, depending on the percentage that you do, my rough calculation was around about a 2 cent kilowatt hour electricity. Okay. We're sitting at the moment with the 3.5 cents. So if we reduce the current electricity by 2 cents and introduce the carbon tax, the impact will be zero in terms of the cost of electricity. So those are all mechanisms. But then you have to bear in mind, you don't have money to spend on something else if you do that exercise. So you have to make the choice. Are you going to then do all the resources that you've got in one step, or are you going to spread it across the board? Which means the tax incentive for energy efficiency, we should stop it, because there is no money for it. Okay. Those are the dynamics that I think we need to see coherently. And it's fairly easy, Chair, to have a summary on the table of saying these are the positive revenue, negative revenue implications, and maybe that's an exercise, and in between all of that is in here, that you can do to show you that all of those things have been taken into account. And the bottom line is here two things. One is that if we all agree, and this is the refrain that sometimes come up, and I then question people's sincerity, if we all agree that climate change is an issue, if we all agree that action needs to be taken, then why are we so reluctant take a particular step that is a marginal step in the global perspective? What South Africa is proposing is on the fringes of what is happening globally. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much once more, Momo, and the honorable members. Indeed, taxation is not a simple issue. It's worse because now we're dealing with carbon taxation, which is, in my take, transversal in as far as our mandate is concerned. And I think we are all in agreement that this is the beginning from our side, and we will definitely make sure that we become a valuable participant in this process in terms of engaging robustly, but also in terms of listening to other views around this complicated aspect. But I think what is emerging out of our deliberation as an agent assignment for us as a committee is to get the take of other key committees in this transversal aspect, that is your energy and your environmental committee. So I think that is an immediate assignment for the committee to look get as part of ensuring that we participate constructively in this process. I want to once more take this opportunity for a moment, Cecil, and for being here on behalf of National Treasury. I think this process, or maybe our engagement, has its purpose. And, I will request that the committee members, as we rise, please remain seated so as we deliberate on our program for next week. Thank you very much, honorable members and guests. This meeting is officially adjourned.
Thank you.
With due respect, there are interviews to be conducted. I think there is an aspect of for interviews to be conducted.